శ్రీగురుభ్యో నమః హరి ఓం గణానా గణపతి హవామహే కవీకవీనాముపమశ్రవత్సవం జ్యేష్ఠరాజం బ్రహ్మణస్పతాపం శ్రీమహాగణాధిపతయే నమః సదాశివసంభ్రమాన్ శంకరాచార్యమ్యమాన్ అస్మదాచార్యపర్యంతాన్ వందే గురు పరంపరాం. ఆత్మస్వరూప పరంపర అభ్యాస భాష్య ఈజ్ ద ఇంట్రడక్షన్ టు బ్రహ్మసూత్ర. బ్రహ్మసూత్ర ఇట్ ఈస్ ది భూమిక, ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ భూమిక ద ఇంట్రడక్షన్ ఇంట్రడ్యూసింగ్ ది సబ్జెక్ట్ మ్యాటర్ ఇట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ భూమిక. అండ్ దిస్ భాష్య ఇట్స్ అ స్మాల్ సెక్షన్. బ్రహ్మసూత్ర భాష్య ఇస్ అ వెరీ బిగ్ ఎలాబొరేట్ థింగ్. ఇన్ దట్ ది ఇంట్రడక్షన్ ఈజ్ అ వెరీ స్మాల్ సెక్షన్, ఫ్యూ పారాగ్రాఫ్స్ ఆర్ దేర్. బట్ ఇట్ ఈస్ వరల్డ్ రినౌండ్. శంకరాస్ ఫిలాసఫీ is known all over the world. They study everywhere, in Germany, in Japan, in America, everywhere they study. All philosophers of the world, they study. They have any number of philosophers have studied. And there are two bhashyas, two sections of the Shankara's bhashya, which are particularly popular among the Western philosophers also. They are considered as the master strokes of Shankara's philosophy. So one of them is Adhyasa Bhashya and the second is Puchya Brahmavada, that is called. Puchya Brahmavada is Anandamaya Adhikarana, is there in Brahma Sutra. So in that Anandamaya Adhikarana, Shankara comes out with some very revolutionary ideas and new path-breaking ideas, going tangentially against all the established methods of analysis till then which were prevalent. So Shankara is particularly recognized for his marvel of that intelligence, especially in these two bhashyas. The Western world also well recognized. And the glory of this Adhyasa Bhashyam is it establishes ajnana, the ignorance in the human being's life. Because we assume that the ideas, the thinking, the notions, the concepts that we have and according to which we lead a life, they are all real. That is how we assume. In fact, our lives are ruled by the mind. And we hold on to a set of ideas as a gospel truth. This is the problem, you know. So a common man, he just lives the life as it happens. He doesn't philosophize his mistake. Whereas the educated people and the people who are having various kinds of strong ideas and belief systems, they philosophize their mistakes and they get very strongly fixed in the mistakes. So the fixations they are called. So it is very difficult to shake these fixations. But Adhyasa Bhashyam does that. It is very shattering bhashya in the sense that it doesn't spare any of these ideas and notions. It presents the ignorance for what it is in a very vivid fashion. So the purpose is, once we understand clearly that the ideas and beliefs that we are holding on to are nothing but our imagination, they are not real, so slowly their grip will slacken. And we develop that open-mindedness. And then jijnyasa. Jijnyasa means vicharaha. Jijnyasa, another it is synonymous with the word vichara. Jijnyasa is the desire to know. That is the literal meaning of the word. But it is a desire to know. It is understood as vichara. I will tell you why you have to call it vichara. Why not just leave it as desire to know? I will explain it later. సో జిజ్ఞాస మీన్స్ విచార, బ్రహ్మ జిజ్ఞాస మీన్స్ బ్రహ్మ విచార, కర్తవ్య వన్ హ్యాస్ టు డూ ఇంక్వైరీ ఇన్ టు ది రియాలిటీ. సో దట్ ఈస్ హౌ బ్రహ్మ విచార విచ్ ఇస్ కన్సిడర్డ్ ద మేజర్ సాధన ఫర్ గెయినింగ్ ది నాలెడ్జ్ ఆఫ్ ది సెల్ఫ్, బ్రహ్మ విచార ఆర్ ఆత్మ విచార. సో దట్ ఇంక్వైరీ, దట్ ఈస్ ది సాధన. ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఎల్స్ ఈజ్ సబార్డినేట్, ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఎల్స్ కుడ్ బి కుడ్ ప్లే అ స్మాల్ రోల్, బట్ ద మెయిన్ సాధన ఈజ్ విచార, ఆత్మ విచార, ద డైరెక్ట్ మెథడ్. భగవాన్ గురు మహర్షి యూస్ టు సే డైరెక్ట్ మెథడ్, దట్ ఈస్ ది ఆత్మ విచార. దిస్ ఆత్మ విచార ఈజ్ ది ఓన్లీ వే టు గెయిన్ లిబరేషన్ ఫ్రమ్ ది బాండేజ్ ఆఫ్ సంస్కార. దట్ హ్యాస్ టు బి ఎస్టాబ్లిష్డ్. సో టు ఎస్టాబ్లిష్ ఇట్, టు ఎస్టాబ్లిష్ ది నీడ్ ఆఫ్ విచార, యు హ్యావ్ టు ఫస్ట్ ఎస్టాబ్లిష్ అజ్ఞాన. వితౌట్ ఎస్టాబ్లిషింగ్ అజ్ఞాన, దెర్ ఇఫ్ ఐ అస్యూమ్ దట్ వాట్ ఆల్ ఐ థింక్ ఈజ్ ఆల్ రైట్, ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ ఈజ్ ఓకే, ఐఎమ్ డూయింగ్ క్వైట్ ఆల్ రైట్ ఇన్ మై అండర్స్టాండింగ్ అండ్ ఇన్ మై థింకింగ్, దెన్ వై దెర్ ఈజ్ నో నీడ్ ఫర్ ఎనీ విచార. సో ది పర్సన్ హ్యాస్ టు బి టోల్డ్ దట్ ఎవ్రీ సింగిల్ ఐడియా దట్ హీ హ్యాస్ ఈజ్ ఫాల్స్, ఎవ్రీ సింగిల్ ఐడియా వితౌట్ ఎక్సెప్షన్. దెన్ హీ హ్యాస్ టు ఫస్ట్ అప్రిషియేట్ దట్, వన్ హ్యాస్ టు అప్రిషియేట్ దట్. వెరీ డిఫికల్ట్ టు అప్రిషియేట్ ఐ టెల్ యూ, బట్ వన్ హ్యాస్ టు అప్రిషియేట్ ఇట్. హ్యావింగ్ అప్రిషియేటెడ్ దట్, దెన్ ది డోర్ నౌ ఓపెన్స్ ఫర్ వాట్ ఈస్ కాల్డ్ విచార. Therefore, Shankara has all this in his mind when he has written this Abhyasa Bhashya. That is the way to understand Abhyasa Bhashya. He is about to comment upon the Brahma Sutras. So, Sutra is an aphorism, that is how it is translated. It is a very brief, terse statement. And a statement which is very poignant statement. It is loaded with a lot of meaning. In fact, a sutra is defined as alpaksharam asandigdham saravad vishmato mukham astobham anavadyancha sutram sutra vido viduhu. That is the definition given for a sutra. So, it's an interesting definition. In Sanskrit, everything is defined in an anushtup verse. So it is easy to remember and all that. That is a style. Everything is presented in the form of a verse. And the matter of that verse is mostly anushtup. So this also is like that. The sutram is alpaksharam. Means it has a few syllables only, not many. It may not be very lengthy. Okay. It may not be very lengthy. There is no such hard and fast rule. It could be lengthy also sometimes. But generally, it should not be unnecessarily lengthy, alpaksharam. A few words must be there. Generally, truth is always simple. It is the falsehood which is very complex and very, very roundabout and very clumsy, presented in elaborate sentences and paragraphs. Whereas the truth is very simple, forthright, and just it comes and hits us in our face. It is always like that. So this nature of the truth is like that. So that inherent nature of the truth is utilized in making statements which present the truth in a very simple fashion, in very few words. That is the spirit of the sutra. So alpaksharam, when it is needed, it may have a length, it may be a longer sentence, but normally it will be very simple, a laconic statement, alpaksharam. But it will not be ambiguous, asandigdham. After hearing it, you whether we have to understand it this way or that way, that kind of doubt should not be there. So clarity should not be sacrificed for the sake of brevity, you know. So it should be brief, but at the same time it should be clear. Brevity should not be sacrificed. For the sake of brevity, if necessary, you add another few words, doesn't matter. But brevity must be maintained. Alpaksharam, asandigdham, and then saravat. It must have some important message to convey. Not some silly thing. సో సమ్ సిల్లీ యూస్లెస్ ఇన్ఫర్మేషన్ విచ్ హ్యాస్ నో రెలవెన్స్ టు హ్యూమన్ ఎండివర్ ఆర్ ఫర్ ది గ్రోత్ ఆఫ్ ది పర్సన్, సమ్ సచ్ సిల్లీ ఇన్ఫర్మేషన్ యు పుట్ ఇట్ ఇన్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ ఎ సూత్ర అండ్ గివ్ ఇట్, ఇట్ ఈజ్ ఓకే, యూ కెన్ డూ దాట్, బట్ ఇట్ హ్యాస్ నో మీనింగ్, ఇట్ డజంట్ సర్వ్ ఎనీ పర్పస్. దేర్ఫోర్ సూత్ర మస్ట్ బి ది సబ్జెక్ట్ మ్యాటర్ ఆఫ్ ది సూత్ర మస్ట్ బి వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ సబ్జెక్ట్ మ్యాటర్, దట్ ఈస్ ది మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ సేయింగ్ సారవత్. విశ్వతో ముఖం, సో విశ్వతో ముఖం మీన్స్ సో ఇట్ మస్ట్ బి ఎమినబుల్ ఫర్ మల్టిపుల్ అండర్స్టాండింగ్, అది ఐడియా ఈజ్ ఇట్ మస్ట్ కవర్ ఎ లార్జ్ గ్రౌండ్ ఆఫ్ ది సబ్జెక్ట్ మ్యాటర్ సో దట్ ఇట్ కెన్ హెల్ప్ అస్ టు అండర్స్టాండ్ క్వైట్ ఎ ఫ్యూ థింగ్స్. ఇట్ హ్యాస్ మెనీ ఫేసెస్ విశ్వతో ముఖం మీన్స్, సో when you look at this sutra and understand it in this direction, you get this message. Slightly alter the direction, you get a different message. Like that it could be vishvato mukham. One best example for that is the third sutra, shastra yonitva. So the simple word, it is shastra yoni, it could be presented as a shashti tatpurusha and we get one beautiful message out of it, or it could be a bahuvrihi samasa and then we get an entirely different but equally valid and beautiful message out of it. So that kind of vishvato mukhatvam means the sutram is amenable to look at it in more than one way and it gives us multiple information, so a variety of information it can give within the same subject matter. So vishvato mukham astobham, stobha is a meaningless word, that is how it is. Especially this stobha, the word is popular in singing, in music, etc. In Sama also, Samagana, the singing of the hymns is Samagana there. And also in music. In music, you know, Alapa, they say, in the beginning of any kirtana, they say Alapa. In that Alapa, they use only stobhas, meaningless words. Like Nanna, like that they do Alapa. That Nanna is not a meaningful word, Arlala, like that. So, and even during the song also they do that, Stobha. So, Sariga, 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 Riga, 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 like that they do. This is all Stobha. And when it comes to Samaganam, a similar thing could be there. There are Stobhaksharas, ha, 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 like that he will sing a hymn. That ha has no meaning. So like for example, agnim ha 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 ide purohitam hu 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 ha ha ha, like that he will sing. So just I am imitating, he may not do exactly that way. In that the meaningful words are agnim ide purohitam. The ha, he, who, etc. in between they are there, they are meaningless. But they have to be, it has to be sung like that. That is the method of singing it. So those syllables are those syllables are collection of syllables. They are called stobha. So you may as well have stobha in music and in samagana, but not in sutra. So sometimes what happens is, we use the cha, vai, etc. So, you see, one person was trying to write an anushtup. Four lines will be there. So he managed the first line. He is composing a verse. So he managed the first line, something he said. Then the second line also somehow managed to say. Then the third line and fourth line have to come, then the verse will be ready. So what to do for the third line? All the information which he had to put in that verse is already exhausted now. There is no other information is left. Therefore he said, he did what he did. Chavai tuhi, like that. I hope you got what I am trying to say. Chavai tuhi, these are nipatas. Means these are one syllable words which may have some meaning in a given situation, or you can use them even to fill a gap called padapuranam. Just to fill a gap, yes, 8 syllables must be there in one quarter. You got already 7. Now what are you going to do? you cannot expand the 7 to 8. So put a cha. Cha, you put the cha. You want, cha is a laghu. But if you want guru, why? You put why. Why is guru? Laghu or guru, whatever you want, you can put. So now 8 are sitting there. So that kind of a word is called stobha. Some mediocre poets, when they write poems, they are full of such stobhas. For no purpose, why will be there? Or for no purpose, cha will be there, or he will be there. So, whereas in the poetry of Kalidasa, etc., great poets, you don't find any such meaningless words. So, just to fill the gap, some word is dropped there. It's not like that. That should not be like that. So, sutra will not have any such word. Then, anavadhyamcha. It must be blemishless. Avadhyam is a blemish. Sutra must be blemishless. So, this is how they define a sutra. So, the idea is, it's a very terse statement, full of meaning, blemishless, without any wasteful words, and it conveys a wonderful message. It covers a large area of the subject matter, Vishvato Mukham. So, these are some of the characteristics of a sutra. This kind of a literature, sutra literature, is very unique to Hindu philosophy. You don't find it in any other culture. Sutra literature is unique to India. Everything is presented in the form of sutras. We have the Vyakarana sutras, Panini's sutras. Then we have Yoga sutras, Bhakti sutras of Narada, Shandingya Bhakti sutras, another set of sutras. So, like that, all shastras are presented in sutras. Like Kapilasa Sankhya Shastram is in sutras. Then Vaisheshika Shastram, Kanadas Vaisheshika Shastra is in sutras. Then Nyaya Shastram, Indian logic, Indian logic, that is Gautama has composed the sutras, Gautama sutras. Then Dharma Shastra, like Mimamsa, Purva Mimamsa, Karma Shastram, the rituals, etc., Apastamba Dharma sutras, Bodhayana sutras, Grihya sutras, and then Kalpa sutras. Kalpa is the methodology of performing a ritual. All that is available in the form of sutras. And then Purva Mimamsa, Jaimini's Purva Mimamsa sutras, then Brahma sutras, Vedanta sutras, like that. There are any number of subjects which are captured in the sutra form. Generally, there was a question once, among all this sutra literature, which are the best sutras? Every sutra, Brahma Sutra has its own subject matter, Purva Mimamsa has its own subject matter, sutra has a purpose. Therefore you need not, no need to compare like that. Every sutra has its own glory. But suppose there are a dozen texts of sutras, if you compare them, which stands out as unique? That was a question. Once a few scholars have discussed it. And I was sitting there, so I heard what all they said. The conclusion is, Panini's sutras are the best. Everything else comes later. At the best. But that doesn't mean other sutras are inferior. Each sutra literature has its own glory. Yoga sutras are very simple and very informative and very useful to the seekers. Practitioners, those who practice yoga, the yoga sutras could be very inspiring, like that they say. Then Brahma sutras are known for their glory. They are analytical sutras. They present the subject matter, they analyze the subject matter. Generally, if you look at the sutra literature, you find two kinds of sutras. So, for example, Vyakarana sutras, they do not analyze anything. They present the subject matter. So the entire subject matter of Vyakarana is presented in the form of sutras. So it is called Shabda Anushasanam, Atha Shabda Anushasanam, Atha Yoga Anushasanam. The entire subject matter of yoga is presented in the form of sutras. So that Panini sutras, Mimamsa, all other sutras are like that. But not Purva Mimamsa sutras. They are not like that. They do not present the subject matter. Even Brahma sutras do not present the subject matter. Subject matter is already presented. It need not be presented afresh. So the original text which presents the subject matter of Vedanta is Upanishad. Are a few of them. They are called source books or Akara Grantha. So for the purpose of presenting the subject matter, you don't need sutras. Because the subject matter is already presented. Whereas in the case of Vyakarana, it is not like that. The sutras, if you keep aside, then you don't have any text which presents the subject matter in such a precise and wonderful fashion. Whereas here the subject matter is there, Taittiriya Upanishad, Brihadaranyaka, like that. So we have a dozen important Upanishads which present the subject matter. In fact, each Upanishad is complete in itself. The subject matter is presented. The Tattvadartha Shodhana, what is the meaning of that? What is the meaning of Tvam? What am I? What is the reality of this Jagat? So the under, if the oneness of the three is the truth, then how a seeker has to strive to realize that truth in this life. So all that is presented in every single Upanishad. Therefore every Upanishad is complete in itself. Only thing is, the subject matter is arrived at, the conclusions are arrived at in different directions in different Upanishads. Each Upanishad has its own style, its own method of presenting the subject matter. Even a few prakriyas are other called methodologies, they differ from Upanishad to Upanishad. But ultimately they present the same truth. So, though each Upanishad is complete in itself, you have a very comprehensive and exhaustive study of the subject matter of Upanishads by studying a few of them together, one after another. Therefore, approximately a dozen of them, they really make the subject matter very exhaustive. All possible methodologies get included, and all possible sadhanas, the qualifications required, how the seeker has to strive. All that becomes exhaustively studied if you study these dozen Upanishads. Therefore, approximately a dozen Upanishads, add or subtract one or two. So that is the source book, that is the source of entire Vedantic subject matter. And it is already there before us. So you don't need any sutras to present the subject matter. But then the Upanishadic statements could be sometimes ambiguous. Sometimes it is possible for misunderstanding, or you may try to look at it from different directions and arrive at altogether opposing the conclusions. So all such things are possible. Not everywhere. There are a few sentences in every Upanishad which have to be analyzed under the truth put on a clear pedestal. So that has to be done. The Upanishadic statements, they need an analysis. Also, what happens is in the Upanishads, they are all poetry. Upanishad is not like an essay in physics, etc. You see, it's not like that. There is a lot of poetry in it. And the sage through whom this Upanishad is revealed, so the culture in which the sage is brought up, and so many other factors associated with the sage's upbringing, etc., they get a reflection, the language. So all these things will be there. Therefore, it becomes very necessary to analyze a few things and make things unambiguous. And so, what is already established in the Upanishads by the Shruti is now analyzed further using the sutras. That is the purpose of Brahma Sutra. So Tikakara, etc., they present it very beautifully. So Agamataha Siddham Satyam Nyayataha Vicharyate, something to that effect it is said. The truth is present before us. It is presented by the Shruti. It is already there. But to appreciate that truth, to assimilate it, a lot of inquiry will be needed, because we have so many doubts, we have all kinds of contradictory fixations of mind, all these things are there. And the human mind is a very peculiar thing. It comes out with all kinds of theories and opinions, etc. So it is a variegated picture, and it could be quite confusing also. Therefore, an analysis a threadbare analysis of all these things becomes necessary to understand the import of the Upanishadic statements. Therefore, such an analysis is provided. Nyaya is analyzing, logically, rationally analyzing the Upanishadic statements. Not every one of them, wherever it is needed. In some cases, you don't need any analysis, it is obvious. But where it is not so obvious, where there could be scope for doubt, then analysis becomes important. So in all such cases, the Brahma Sutras provide a beautiful analysis. So that is the purpose of Brahma Sutras. So they are analytical sutras. That is an important point. And then these sutras are arranged in four adhyayas. Adhyaya. Each adhyaya is divided into four pada. Pada is 1/4. A quarter is called pada. Therefore, naturally when you say pada, it must have four normally. Sometimes you can say three padas. Tripada, Gayatri, etc. Could be there. Normally, pada means there must be four of them, quarter. So four padas. And then the four adhyayas, each adhyaya four padas. So you will have total 4 × 4, 16 padas. Somehow in Brahma Sutra, the four becomes important. Because in Upanishad, the Brahma, the reality itself is presented as Chatushpat. Chatushpat Brahma. Brahma who has four padas. Pada could be legs, four legs like a cow. Or four quarters, the vastu, the reality, Purnam, it is divided into four quarters. From a standpoint, it's not that it is really divided or any such thing. So Brahma Chatushpat, like that they present. Also you must have heard the word Turiya Atma. Atma is a Turiya. Turiya means fourth. So that four is very important in Vedanta Shastra. Therefore, Vyasa Maharshi somehow incorporated that sacred number four, which is very relevant in the context of the subject matter of Vedanta, into the structure of Brahma Sutra. So he made four adhyayas, all the sutras are put into four adhyayas, and each adhyaya subdivided into four padas. Altogether, we have 555 sutras. And the entire subject matter is arranged in the form of various sections. So altogether, in four adhyayas, which have 16 padas, having 555 sutras, we have 191 sections. Each section is called an adhikarana, chapter, section or chapter, 191 of them. So now it is clear that at least in many chapters or many sections, the subject matter will have more than one sutra, because 555 sutras constitute 191 adhikaranas. Means naturally some of the adhikaranas may have a single sutra, which is the case with the first four adhikaranas. Chatushutri, four sutras, four adhikarana, four sections. The first sutra, Athato Brahma Jijnasa, constitutes the first section. The section itself has only one sutra. Like that we have four sections, each having only one sutra. All the rest of the adhikaranas, adhikarana is a section or a chapter, all the rest of the adhikaranas have multiple sutras, sometimes 2, 3, 4, like that, sometimes even 7, 8 sutras. So that is the structure. Then these sections or chapters are called adhikarana. The meaning of the word adhikarana, if you look at the dictionary, it means a court of law. So this is called adhikarana nyayam. The subject matter is presented in a structure which resembles the court of law, the proceedings of a court of law. So in the court of law, what happens is there is a topic to be settled one way or the other. There is a topic, and the judge will give his judgment on that topic. But before the judgment comes, we have vadi pratiwadi, the one who the prosecution and the defense. So The Vadi presents his side of the story with all arguments before the judge. Then the Prativadi, the defense or the opponent of the defense, whatever you call it, so he presents his side of the story. And so both people are given ample opportunity to put before the judge their arguments, and all their opinions are examined. So they are given total freedom to present their arguments, no holds barred. But once they present their arguments, the judge comes out with a judgment, and the judgment will be binding. This is the adhikarana, the proceedings of a court of law. And this kind of a method, almost similar to that, may not be exactly like that, that kind of a method is followed in presenting the subject matter in each chapter. And this is called adhikarana nyaya. Nyaya means the method. The method of adhikarana is followed, adhikarana being the court. That's why each chapter is named as an adhikarana. For example, the very first chapter is called jijnyasa adhikaranam. That is the name given. So, because you know the sutra is athato brahma jijnyasa. So, the most important word in that sutra is jijnyasa. Therefore, the adhikarana gains the name beginning with that word jijnyasa. Jijnyasa adhikaranam. So do sandhi, it becomes jijnyasa adhikaranam. The second adhikarana is called janmadya adhikaranam, because the sutra is janmadyasya yataha. Third adhikarana is called shastra yonitva adhikaranam, because the sutra is shastra yonitvat. The fourth sutra is tattu samanvayat, and it is called samanvaya adhikaranam. Like this, the naming goes. So, the adhikarana nyaya is explained like this. There is again a verse. What is this adhikarana? Panchangam shastre adhikaranam matam vishayo vishayaschaiva purvapakshastathottaram sangatischeti panchangam. There are five angas. Anga means limb. The word to word meaning is a limb, literal meaning. But five things, five elements, good. There are five elements which together constitute an adhikaranam. What are those five? Vishaya. Vishaya means the subject matter, prameya. So each chapter or each adhikarana has a subject matter. And this subject matter has its origin in a sentence of the Upanishad, because the adhikaranas or the sutras purpose is to analyze the Upanishadic statement. Therefore, each the subject matter of each adhikarana has a corresponding sentence in the Upanishad. And that sentence is called Vishaya Vakya, the sentence which is the subject matter of this adhikarana, Vishaya Vakya. For example, the very first adhikarana, it is called athato, the sutra is athato brahma jijnyasa, and the name of the adhikaranam is jijnyasa adhikaranam, and the vishaya vakya, the statement which constitutes the subject matter of this adhikarana, that statement of the Upanishad, it is in Taittiriya Upanishad. So Taittiriya it says, tad brahmeti tadvijijnyasasva. So that Brahma, that is Brahma, and that Brahma you should know. You should strive to know. You should vijijnyasasva, not vijanihi. Vijanihi means you know it. It is not said like that. It is not said that you know it. It is not like knowing a part or some other subject matter, physics, chemistry. It's not like that. Therefore, as long as I do not know Brahman, I have a desire to know it. But once I know it, then I will know that it is not a thing to be known. So, all these issues are there. So, you are having a desire to know the Brahman is a very good starting point, but ultimately, you have to get rid of this notion that you don't know Brahman. You will know it sometime in future. As long as a person thinks that he will come to know of Brahman later, sometime in the later in the life, he will not know it. He will be thinking like that only. You see, I tell you how it is. In India, these small grocery stores will be there. They have a small board hanging there. You know what they say on that board? Udhar kal, like that. Aruvu repu in Telugu. In Hindi, udhar kal. Means a credit tomorrow. Sometimes they put in English also. Credit tomorrow. So if you are looking for some credit, you will get it tomorrow. So you will never get it. That is how it is. Because you go tomorrow again. But by the time you go tomorrow, that will not be tomorrow, that will be today. And again it says credit tomorrow. So, we don't get credit today, so you have to go again tomorrow. So that means you will never get it. Similarly, Brahmajnanam we will get in the future. Presently we don't get it, it is good also, you know. Suppose suddenly we become Brahmajnanis, then what happens to our job, our family, our home and all these problems will be there. So, we will get it later. Sometime later, after retirement or after some other important things are going on, after they are all settled, we will get it later. Whereas for some more people, in India I come across these people very well, so they are a good number of people are there, they will get it in the next birth. Because you know, Brahmajnana hai na, Brahma Vidya, it is not a small thing. You need even 1 crore lives is worth spending to get it. Shatakoti janmakihi praptyate. So that means there is no urgency for it. That is the idea. It's an escape. So, therefore, as long as we think that we will know it in the future, or it has something to be known by me as distinct from myself, so as long as we think like that, that is not Brahmajnanam. But that is a point to start. That is how you have to start. Do you know the Brahman? No, I don't know. So is it necessary to know? Yeah, it is necessary to know. Then, okay, then I will think about it. I will make an effort to know it. Yeah, you should do that. This is the beginning. In that sense, the Shruti says, Vijijnyasasva. The sun is a suffix, meaning the desire. Jnatum Iccha Jijnyasa. That is called sun. So, anyway, that is how it is done. Even for the Vedantic meditation called Nididhyasanam, there is a sun there. Abhyasa, it gets repeated, it doubles. So, Jijnyasa, Jnya is the verb, that Jnya doubles. Jnya, Jnya, when there is sun, it doubles. So, Jnya, Jnya. And once you have the jnā, when you have two of them, the first one is called abhyāsa, purvobhyāsa, that is the sutra of the Pāṇini. The first one is abhyāsa. So the first jnā is called abhyāsa. In the abhyāsa, only the first hull remains, first consonant remains, all other consonants are gone. So in jnā, the second consonant is chachajajanya, drop it. So now you have jā. The A of the Abhyasa, when it is followed by the sun, becomes Yi. So Jijnyasa, like that it comes. Nididhyasanam, that D comes like that. In Dhyay it is. Dhyay Chintayam. Dhyay, Dhyay. Drop the second consonant. Dhai, Dhyay. That I becomes E. And I becomes A and all that. So Jijnyasanam. There is a sun, the suffix, which means desire too. The suffix is there in Nididhyasana. Shavana Manana Nididhyasana. It means the desire to contemplate upon the Brahman. Because you know, what is meant by contemplating upon Brahman? Achintanameva Brahma Chintanam. Chintanam is contemplation. So you stop contemplating on anything whatsoever, then that is Brahma Chintanam. Adhyanameva Brahma Dhyanam. It is not like stop contemplating on the pot and start contemplating on the flower. It's not like that. So drop all mental effort, drop all thinking on various things of the world, then యు ఆర్ ఇన్ బ్రహ్మన్ ఆల్రెడీ. అధ్యానమేవ బ్రహ్మధ్యానం. సో దట్ ఈస్ హౌ దేర్ ఫోర్ దేర్ యు ఆర్ నాట్ గోయింగ్ టు డూ మెడిటేషన్ ఆన్ ఎ గివెన్ థింగ్. దేర్ ఫోర్ ఇట్ ఈస్ నాట్ మెడిటేషన్ ఇన్ ది క్లాసికల్ సెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ది టర్మ్. దట్స్ వై ఎ సన్ ఈస్ ఇంట్రడ్యూస్డ్ దేర్. సో యూ షుడ్ కాంటెంప్లేట్ అపాన్ బ్రహ్మన్. ఓ షుడ్ ఐ ఐఎమ్ డూయింగ్ అదర్ ఫ్యూ అదర్ కాంటెంప్లేషన్స్. నో నో, ఆల్ దట్ ఈస్ సెకండరీ. యూ షుడ్ హ్యావ్ a love for contemplating upon Brahman like that. So ultimately, when you come to know Brahman, you know that you are Brahman, you are one with it, you are not going to contemplate upon it as though it is different from you. So anyway, all these intricacies are involved. So they are all implied by this sun, that pratyaya, sun, that suffix sun, nididhyasanam. Similarly here, vidijnyasasva. The Shruti doesn't say vijanihi, it says vidijnyasasva. You desire to know. That means you take a few steps in that direction. Ultimately you will come to know that it is all said and done, not different from you. And therefore you need not know it specially. If it is different from you, you have to know it. If it is yourself, then what is there to know? So you will reach that stage. But that stage will come only when you make the first step. To take that first step, you need that earnestness to know. That is jijnyasa. Similarly, that is nididhyasanam. These are the two places where the sun is used in a very special sense. Anyway, so vishayaha. The vishaya vakya for the first adhikaranam is that vijijnyasasva tadbrahmeti. Brahma vidijnyasasva, like that he says. That is the vishaya vakyam. And so vishayaha. In the adhikarana, there are five elements. So the first element is vishayaha. Then comes vishayaha. Sha is Shrirama sha. Vishaya, not sha. Vishayaha. Vishayaha means doubt. Suppose you have the Upanishadic statement and it is clear. There is no scope for any doubt. Then we need not analyze it. Just read the Upanishad itself and you are satisfied. So there must be a doubt. There is a scope for looking at it this way or that way. There is scope for misinterpretation or wrong understanding. Therefore, it has to be settled clearly. That vishaya, that is an important aspect element in this panchanga adhikaranam. The adhikaranam which has five elements. So vishaya. So this vishaya or the doubt is always presented in the form of a purvapaksha. Some of the adhikaranas, they begin with purvapaksha. Purvapaksha is presented and analyzed thoroughly. All aspects of the purvapaksha are thoroughly understood. Then we start the job of demolishing the purvapaksha. Every doubt that is raised is knocked off. And finally we establish a siddhanta, the ultimate ruling. So that is how it goes. But in samadhikaranas, siddhantena upakramaha, the beginning itself is with siddhanta, like Ishavasya Upanishad. The ultimate reality is presented first and then everything else follows. It is not begin at the beginning and then slowly build up and reach the summit. It's not like that. What is there in the summit is presented in the very first statement, like Ishavasya Medam Sarvam. So that is another way of building up an adhikarana. So all kinds of ways are followed, but at some point in the adhikarana you will have a discussion of doubt and clearing the doubt. Purvapaksha siddhanta, the binary method is adopted. Purvapaksha is a hypothetical opponent is posited and this opponent will present the opposite viewpoint. Sometimes like a devil's advocate, they say that kind of a viewpoint is presented. And Shankara, the Siddhanti, he presents the answer, keeping the teaching of the Upanishad in mind and some of the Nyayas, the methods of analysis, which are established methods. So keeping them in mind, in a systematic method of Shastra is adopted and so the ruling is finally given. Siddhanta comes. If still some more doubts are there, they can be raised by the Purvapakshi and again the Siddhanta becomes more and more strengthened by answering all the possible doubts. So like that a binary method is followed. And this binary method is presented in a very dramatic fashion, in the sense that you get a feeling that there is a Purvapakshi and a Siddhanti sparring with each other. That kind of a feeling you get. That way it is presented. Some kind of a drama is introduced into the presentation. That too it is said adhikarana, you know. So a court scene kind of thing it is. Therefore some drama is brought into the picture. Therefore what happens is, slowly when people, generally human mind functions like this, they just lose sight of the ultimate reality or the truth. They get caught in these details of the drama and all that. So they come out now with stories that Shankara, he has only one job, he lived 32 years, he became a sannyasi at the age of 12 or 16, see 12, and from then on he has only one job to do. That job is go from place to place, find out who is talking what, challenge him, knock him down and go further. It is not like that. How can it be like that? That is against the spirit of Advaita, you know. So then we give a story. There are two Shankara Vijayas. Shankara is presented as a soldier, as a warrior rather than a jnani. So these stories, they become a problem. Shankara himself clarifies in Tarkapadam, he says, I don't have anything against anybody, etc. He never mentions a name. Even while refuting the Bodha philosophy, he doesn't mention any Acharya by name. He refutes Bhartru Prapanchacharya, another Acharya who lived earlier to him, who was more given to Karmakanda theories and all that. He has a commitment to karma and upasana, where duality rules the roost. And so with that commitment he comes into Vedanta, and those samskaras, those impressions which are deep rooted in him, they get reflected in his analysis of the Upanishadic statements and the Brahma Sutras. So Shankara refutes all that. It doesn't mean that he never mentions the name Bhartru Prapancha. Bhartru Prapancha is mentioned by the Tikakaras. They get the information from some old manuscripts and they say, here Shankara is refuting Bhartru Prapancha. Always Shankara says Kechit. Some people they say like that. Kechit, that Bahuvachanam is also used. Need not be plural really. It is a respect, the plural is used in respect of the other person. Similarly, Dharma Kirti, there is another Acharya of Kshanika Vijnanavada. So his theories, his statements are taken for analysis and they are refuted. But without ever mentioning the name of Dharma Kirti. So like that, so the point is not to attack a person or any such thing. There is no such thing. It's only some of the ideas which could be misleading are taken for analysis. They are presented through the mouth of an imaginary Purvapakshi, and then Siddhanta is given. That is a method. Adhikarana Nyayam is followed. The purpose is to help the student to understand. It creates an ambience in which the student gets thoroughly involved in it. He gets emotionally involved in it, and he starts feeling the importance of the discussion and all that, and ultimately he gets attached to that teaching. One has to be, he becomes earnest about the teaching and he understands. That is the purpose. Otherwise the teaching could become dry. It should not become dry. It should not become abstract. So that notion that it is abstract teaching should not come into the mind. It is not abstract, it is very real. The vastu is very real, nothing abstract about it. So that notion should not come into the student's mind. Therefore, this kind of a drama is introduced. That is the spirit of that drama. So vishayaha, then once you have a doubt that it could be this way or that way, then the wrong way is presented as purvapaksha. Purvapakshaha, the right way or the final ruling, Siddhanta, it is also called Uttarapaksha or Uttaram clearly, a reply of the Purvapaksham. While giving reply to the Purvapaksha stands refuted, that is Uttaram. Then the fifth element is Sangati. Sangati means connection. You see, the Sangati becomes very important in the Shastra. You see, it is not like a book of miscellaneous things. We get across some books, miscellany, like that with the name it comes. So all kinds of disparate poetry or items, various essays written by a person at different times on different subjects, or even various essays written by different people, are all collected and put in one book, like souvenir. One page has no connection with the other page. The Shastra should not be like that. Whether it is Upanishad or Brahma Sutra, it should not be like that. There must be ekavakyata. That is what is called ekavakyata. Ekavakyata means one sentence-ness. It is not that literally it is one sentence. It is not that, because there will be hundreds of sentences. The point is, vakya is purport. The purport, the ultimate message, the ultimate truth is one. Whatever is said, it is said in support of that reality, that vastu. Suppose I say something which has no connection whatsoever with the vastu, with the subject matter, then that stands out as an oddball. It doesn't fit into the whole thing. It should not happen like that. There should not be a single statement like that. There should not be a single sutra or single adhikarana which stands out like odd way. It should not be. So that means all through you have to establish that ekavakyata. Ekavakyata means the singleness of the subject matter, something like that. I have seen some of the translations, how they have, because it is difficult to translate some of these things, you know. So how Gambhiranandaji or Madhavanandaji, how did they translate? I was looking at it. They put it in a very beautiful fashion. So the singleness of the subject matter, or the integrity of the subject matter, that is ekavakyata. So otherwise the translation becomes meaningless. Son of the soil is translated into Dharti ka putra hai. That is not what it means. So Matti Putrudu in Telugu, Matti Putrudu, it is not like that. That doesn't mean anything. So it has a different meaning. So carefully it has to be translated. It is not easy to translate. Anyway, so that Sangati, that is the meaning of Sangati. Sangati is connection, also called Sambandha. That's why I quite often say Sambandha Bhashya like that. So that particular part of the Bhashya, which gives a connection between the earlier section and the next section, earlier verse and the next verse. You see, especially in Gita, this becomes very critical. Because in Gita, all the subjects are covered. Sankhya is covered, Purvamimamsa is covered, Dharma Shastras are covered, highest Vedanta is covered. Every available, every philosophy that is around finds an echo in Gita. Very interesting book it is. So, therefore, it is very tough to bring out ekavakyata. The integrity of the subject matter becomes very difficult in the case of Gita. That's why you have a lot of variety of interpretations of Gita, because it is always difficult to establish that flow, singleness in the flow of thought. You go to Sankhya Yoga, then go to Karma Yoga, it appears as if a new topic is being talked about, which has no connection with the earlier chapter. It looks like that. It should not happen like that. If it happens like that, then it loses the status of being a book that can uplift the human being. It should not have that kind of inner contradictions, you know. So, in fact, many Western scholars felt that the Gita is a bunch of contradictions. They felt like that. So, if you have Shankara Bhashya, that really puts Gita into one unitary teaching. If you remove the avatarika, they are called avatarika, the statements which introduce the verse. If you remove these avatarikas, like say for example you take the fifth adhyaya and remove all the avatarikas, introductory statements of Shankara, and read these sentences, it looks as if Sri Krishna is talking all over the place, jumping from one topic to another disparate topic, no connection. meaning some, there is no connection. He may be saying wonderful things, but he, no thing is connected to no other thing. So it looks like that. But when you look at Shankara's those connecting statements, he puts them into one unit. It acquires the integrity of the subject matter. So this way, that sangati or sambandha is very critical and very crucial for the development of the subject matter. Otherwise it will be flowing in different directions, loses a track and doesn't help the student. So this is called sangati. So what we do is, we establish the sangati in every adhikarana in various ways. For example, this adhikarana, what is its sangati with the adhikarana that has gone by? That is called adhikarana sangati. Its connection with the next adhikarana will be told in the next adhikarana itself. Therefore, what is gone by? With that, what is the connection of the present adhikarana? That is adhikarana sangati. What is the relevance of this particular adhikarana in this pada, in this quarter? That is called pada sangati. Then, in which way this adhikarana is connected to this adhyaya? It is called adhyaya sangati. So all the three sangatis are carefully maintained in every adhikarana. That is sangatihi, another element of the adhikarana. There are four adhyayas, I told you. These adhyayas have names. I forgot to mention, now I will mention. The first adhyaya is called samanvaya adhyaya. Samanvaya means, they present it as a synthesis. You can say like that. So, it cannot be synthesis of two things which cannot be brought together. How it can be? So, you can mix milk and water, but you cannot mix oil and water, you know. So you cannot say, now I am mixing oil and water. You cannot do that. It will not be possible. There will be no such mixing. You assume that you have mixed, but they never mix. So, synthesis doesn't mean all kinds of contradictory things are brought together into one unitary thing. That cannot be synthesis. Synthesis means the things are apparently looking different, taken by themselves. They appear to be different. They appear to be pointing out different things. But if you look at a little more closely, they are not pointing out different things. They are teaching the same thing. For example, you take Taittiriya Upanishad. It talks of koshas, this and that. And then go to Mundaka Upanishad or Mandukya Upanishad. It talks of Jagrat Avastha, Swapna Avastha, Yavastha, Avastha, etc. So it looks as if this is talking of some other subject matter, that is talking of some other subject matter. Like that it may appear. But it is not so. All of them are talking of the same vastu. This is called samanvaya. Sam, anu, aya, aya gatav. So all the vatyas of various Upanishads, the established source books called Upanishads, all the statements in those books, they point out to the same truth. Very well, they do that. They follow different methods, but ultimately they point out to the same truth. They point out to the reality called Brahman, which is one without the second. So they may follow different, apparently different paths, but ultimately they converge in the same truth. This is called samanvaya, convergence. So this is established in the first adhyaya. That's why it is called samanvaya adhyaya. Therefore, in the first adhyaya, any number of adhikaranas are there. Pada after pada, four of them, various topics of the Upanishads are taken and they are analyzed, and it is established that every one of them points out to the same truth. The language differs, the method differs, but the goal is same. That is samanvaya adhyaya. Then second adhyaya is called avirodha adhyaya. Yeah, I have to say all these things before actually going into the text. So then I will be satisfied that what all has to be said is said, and now we can go into the text. So samanvayadhyaya is over. Second is avirodhadhyaya. So now at the end of the samanvayadhyaya, we are having a truth stated in a unison way by all the Upanishads. It is before us. But there could be any number of objections in assimilating that truth. I want to assimilate, for example, I want to assimilate the truth that Atma is not Karta, Atma is not the doer. I want to assimilate it. But there are any number of free will, this and that, so many objections could be there to that. So I have to analyze all those things and get rid of the objections. I have to cast aside, cast off the objections, you know, that becomes necessary. So Virodha, wherever possible, it has to be brought out. You cannot gloss over it, you cannot push it under the carpet. It will not disappear like that. So take it out and look at it in the light of wisdom and then refute it and prove that it is not a real contradiction. Avirodha Adhyaya, the second Adhyaya. Then the third Adhyaya is Sadhana. So now we have the truth established in the first Adhyaya. All the objections to it and all the possible doubts are negated. So the truth is now strengthened further in my understanding, but I have to assimilate it. Because it is not anatma vidya. In the case of anatma vidya, knowing and assimilating, there are no two such stages. If you know, you have there is nothing like assimilated. Binomial theorem or Newton's laws, whatever. If you know it, then there is nothing like assimilation. One more step called assimilation. Whereas, when it comes to atma vidya, knowing is one step, the primary step only, preliminary step. The real benefit accrues to the person only when he assimilates it. That assimilation, that means understanding deeply within, that kind of knowing, the knowing should be translated into that, transformed into a deep understanding within. That gulf should be bridged between the person and his knowledge. There is always a gulf. I am different, and what I know is different from what I am. I know wonderful things, but I don't have time for all those things, you know. So I am as a person, I am different from what I know. Light and life are at two different levels. Light is knowledge. Life is living. There are two different levels. There is a gulf. That gulf has to be bridged. This is achieved by what is called sadhana. Sadhana means striving. We want to have a word with a punch. You can say effort. Effort is also a good word, but striving, it sounds a little better. Powerful word. So, you can say seeker, sadhaka, seeker. Seeker doesn't sound so powerful. Striver. That sounds a little more, because the word is like that. So, sadhana. Once you set a goal before you have to work for it. And you have to drop a few things if necessary. And you have to acquire a few other things depending upon the need. So, then only you will be able to reach the goal. Therefore, that sadhana becomes very important. Especially in Vedanta, the sadhana is all the more important. It is nivritti pradhana. It is not pravritti. Karmakanda, their sadhana is pravritti. Here, sadhana is in the form of refraining from the unnecessary work. So, shamadamadi. It is all refrain. So, I tell you, It is difficult to work in this world, but it is more difficult to refrain from unnecessary work. You need a very big wisdom for that. So, that is sadhana, shama, dama, etc. They are all refraining, uparati. Everything is a withdraw from unnecessary work. Because, you know, work is self-perpetuating. It engulfs us in the vortex, in a vortex-like situation. Anyway, so sadhana is very important. The sadhana of the Dharma Shastras, of the Karmakanda, has really nothing to do with the sadhana of the Vedanta. It is altogether a different sadhana, striving. And hence, an adhyaya is devoted to that, with four padas. And finally, phalam. Phalam means not the end result that we have in view. It's not like that. Phalam means moksha is the phalam. It is presented as a phala till you know that it is not a phala. real, in real terms it is not a phala, but till you know that it is presented, like Brahma is presented as a goal to be achieved by us. Brahma jijnasa, you have to gain the Brahma by inquiry. It is presented as a goal. To begin with, it appears as I have to reach Brahma, like that it appears. But having reached, you know that it is never, you are never separate from it. This Atma, once understood, you will know that you are never away from it. That kind of a knowing it is. Therefore, that knowing is presented as a phala to begin with. So the language seems to be similar to that of karma phala, karma and karma phala. You do this karma, you go to heaven. Heaven is the phala. On the other hand, you do a different set of things, you will get moksha or Brahma as a phala. So it sounds like that. But let it sound like that, no harm. So to begin with, it's all right. So we have a phala. The phala is analyzed. And there some questions will be raised. Suppose we strive for this knowledge and ultimately we don't live long enough to gain that knowledge, then what happens? That question would be there. So that will be discussed. All the issues related to phala will be discussed. And an entire adhyaya is devoted to that. That is phaladhyaya. Now it is complete. The shastra is complete. So this is how the shastra proceeds. And we have seen the meaning of the word adhikarana also. You see, this Brahma Sutra has a name. The name will be mentioned again at the end of the Adhyasa Bhashya. It is called Shariraka Darshanam. Darshanam means a vision. So, an understanding which elevates the person. That is called Darshanam. So, in our life we make mistakes because we don't have Darshanam, Jnanam. And we get elevated by virtue of darshanam. That is the meaning of the word darshanam. And Brahma Sutra is a darshanam. It is like a torch that is put in our hands. You see, Gita or Upanishads, they don't teach you or they don't enjoin you to do a few things. Like injunctions and interdictions. They are not part of Gita and Upanishads. Do's and don'ts. They are not part of Gita and Upanishads. They won't tell you what to do and what not to do. The Gita and Upanishads put a torch in your hands, the light of wisdom in your hands. Now you walk your path and you do whatever you like to do. The torch of wisdom is put in the hands, that's all. That's why this shastra is called Darshanam. It is the torch of wisdom, light of wisdom. It is given to us. Now, as that light illuminates ourselves and the world and all our surroundings, it illuminates all situations, then right action automatically follows right knowledge. It is always like that. That's why here right is darshanam. Here the emphasis is on understanding. You know it. No, what is there in knowing we have to do? Chitirshavaha. People, jnasavaha na chitirshavaha. They are not keen to know. Knowing they postpone all the time. Because they are in a hurry to do things. Chitirshavaha, kartumichavaha, nothing jnatum. So, whereas here it is called darshanasha, darshanam, because here the emphasis is on knowing. And the doing follows automatically. Whatever is the right thing to do, you will do once you know. So, that's why this is called a darshanam. And it is called Shariraka Darshanam. Though it is otherwise known, different way known as Brahma Sutra, but another name for it, in fact, the most appropriate name for it is Shariraka Darshanam. So, Shariraka means Sharire Bhavaha Sharirakaha. Sharire Bhavaha Sharirakaha Shariraka Eva Sharirakaha. So, that is the Yutpatti. So, the reality that indwells this body mind, that is called Shariraka. So this is what is called Adhyatma Jnanam. So the reality, the truth that we ultimately want to acquire or achieve, whatever you say or know, that the truth is the indweller, it indwells this body mind. That is the meaning of Shariraka. So the name given to is Atma. So in that sense it is Shariraka Darshanam. The idea of emphasizing the word Shariraka is like this. You want to know God. No hurry. Just let the God stay where he is. You will know it. There is no hurry. You will know God. Okay. We will know God later, but first let me know the world. No, no. You can know the world also. Just keep it aside. You will come to know it. You know yourself. So, the starting point in a person's life, in this path of spirituality, the starting point is not God, or it is not the world. For bhakti, the starting point is God. For karma, the starting point is the world. For shariraka darshanam, it is something more than the gauna bhakti and the karma. Here the starting point is myself. That's why it is called adhyatma jnanam. Atmani adhyatmam. Atmani. So the subject matter of the vision of the shastra or the darshana is one's own true self. No, no, I know myself. No, you don't know myself, yourself. You don't know yourself. If you know yourself, then there will be no sorrow and strife in life. There should not be. But do you experience sorrow and strife or not? Yes, I experience. That means you don't know yourself. So, the focus is know yourself. By the time you know yourself, your true self, then you will know that the world is really nothing but a form of God himself. And you will at once know what is world, and you will in the same knowledge you will know God also. Everything gets included. Ekasmin vijnate sarvamidam vijnatam bhavate. You will have known the entire world, and you will have known God in its totality. First you know your true self. That is the emphasis here. And hence it is called shariraka darshanam. You see, in life we have so many ideas about ourselves. Like for example, even in the field of religion, so people assume themselves to be papi punyatma. I am a papi, or I have a lot of merit, or I assume myself to be short or fat. That kind of assumptions are there based on the structure of the body. Then the skin color also contributes to the image of the self. I am very fair looking, fair and lovely, and I am a black, kala and all that. So that kind of self-image is there. And then we have murkha vijnana, vijnani. So I am a murkha, I am a dullard, or I am a great scholar. So that kind of self-images could be there. Then I am rich, I am poor, etc. That could be there. I am happy person. I am an unfortunate person. I am an unhappy person. Many people say like that. So I am unhappy. The God is against me. So the circumstances do not favor me. Like that people have complaints all the time. And then people are all the time concerned about going to heaven and coming back from heaven. So in the earlier life I was that. Now I came into this life. From here I will go to heaven. And from heaven I should not go to hell. And so I should remain in heaven only. But if it has, if it is inevitable to come back, then I should come back as the son of a king. So like this, anajana, this is gamana gamana. So this is there in the field of religion. And that really rules the lives of the people. So all these issues that the people have about themselves, so these are all there in place only because of the ignorance of the true self. And this brahmajnana, athato brahmajnyasa, brahma vicharah kartavyaha, you desire to know the Brahman, and you inquire into the truth of Brahman, the reality called Brahman, and ultimately come to know Brahman. This brahmajnana is like brahmastra. You know, brahmastram. Brahmastram is the ultimate weapon. Like a hydrogen bomb, like that it is brahmastra. Not even atom bomb. Atom bomb is very inferior when compared with hydrogen bomb. You see, for a hydrogen bomb, the trigger, you know, trigger, which triggers the hydrogen bomb is an atom bomb. That is how it, atom bomb acts as a trigger. It fires, and then hydrogen bomb, it is exploded. This is the trigger of an hydrogen bomb. Very, very interesting. So like, if you have a grenade, there will be a small wick coming out. And so that wick, you light it, the grenade will explode. So atom bomb is like that wick for a hydrogen bomb. And this hydrogen, Brahmastra it is. Brahmastra for all the ills of human existence. This is the Brahmajnanam. In fact, there is freedom, happiness or joy is a synonymous to freedom. They are one and the same. The language may be different, they mean different things, but the reality conveyed by them is one and the same. Freedom is same as happiness. And freedom from what? Freedom from the bondage of the worldliness, bondage of this isolated existence, I am separate from everything else, etc. So that freedom called mukti, that is gained by a person only by knowledge. Rute jnanat na mukti. All other things may have some contributory role to play, but ultimately the person gets liberated from the bondage, from the thraldom of samsara, only by knowledge. Knowledge alone liberates the person. So it is sometimes difficult to appreciate the overwhelming importance of knowledge, because people see in a very short range, with a very short range view. So they perform a karma and see some result which is strikingly present, and therefore they get carried away by this karma karma phala equation, sadhana sadhya relationship. So they fail to appreciate the importance of knowledge, because they come to know something and it doesn't seem to enrich them in real terms, because for the people the worldliness becomes so overwhelming, the mundane things become so overwhelmingly important that we do not appreciate the significance of knowledge. We always get carried away by the immediate results that accrue by effort. So it is easy to get loose the path. We do that all the time. That's why it is always emphasized that it is the knowledge which liberates. It has to be said 1,000 times. Having said 1,000 times, you have to say it 1,001 time also. Because people get easily carried away by short-sightedness. Therefore, we say, rute jnanan na muktihi. There is no freedom from the thraldom of samsara except by the knowledge of the Brahman. So this is how we prepare the ground for Brahma vichara. Then, okay, you start Brahma vichara, athato Brahma jijnyasa, shudu karo. No, it's not like that. You have to first establish the bhumika. So Brahma vichara is meant for eliminating, not to accomplish anything newly. It doesn't accomplish anything new. Doesn't. Because Brahma is not sadhya. It is not a thing to be accomplished either by inquiry or by effort. It is neither karma sadhya nor jnana sadhya. In fact, jnana, knowledge, accomplishes nothing. Knowledge doesn't accomplish anything. If you have to accomplish something which is not there with you, you have to do karma. Karma only will bring you what you don't have. It will accomplish something which you don't have. Jnanam is like a lamp, light. If you put the light on, it doesn't create things in the room. It only shows what things are there. Therefore, when you have to accomplish something which is not there with you have to newly accomplish something, then jnanam is dumb and useless. If at all it has a role, it plays a secondary role in helping the karma. So I know a few things so that now I know what to do and how to do. So this way jnanam becomes anga, auxiliary to karma. So సర్వత్రైవ హి విజ్ఞానం పరాంగత్వేన గమ్యతే. దిస్ ఈజ్ సురేశ్వరాచార్య's వర్స్. సర్వత్రైవ హి విజ్ఞానం పరాంగత్వేన గమ్యతే. సర్వత్రైవ హి విజ్ఞానం సంస్కారే సంస్కారత్వేన గమ్యతే. సంస్కారత్వేన గమ్యతే పరాంగం చాత్మ విజ్ఞానాదన్యత్రేత్యవధార్యతాం. సురేశ్వరాచార్య's వర్స్ ఇస్ ఎ బిట్ టఫ్. సో నాలెడ్జ్, వాట్ ఈస్ ది రోల్ ఆఫ్ ది నాలెడ్జ్? ఎవ్రీవేర్ యూనివర్సల్లీ నాలెడ్జ్ ప్లేస్ టూ రోల్స్. ఇట్ అకాంప్లిషెస్ టూ థింగ్స్. వన్, సంస్కార. ఇట్ గివ్స్ ఎ సంస్కార టు యూ, మీన్స్ ఇట్ పుట్స్ ఎన్ ఐడియా ఇన్ యువర్ మైండ్. ఇట్ ఫిక్సెస్ ఎన్ ఇంప్రెషన్ ఇన్ యువర్ మైండ్. దట్ ఈజ్ వన్ రోల్ ఇట్ ప్లేస్, సంస్కార. అండ్ దెన్ కర్మాంగంచ, పరాంగం, పరా ఇస్ కర్మ, ది అదర్. జ్ఞాన అండ్ కర్మ, దేర్ ఆర్ టూ థింగ్స్ ఇన్ వన్స్ లైఫ్, యూనో. కర్మ, కర్మేంద్రియాస్ అండ్ జ్ఞానేంద్రియాస్, ఆర్గన్స్ ఆఫ్ యాక్షన్ అండ్ సెన్స్ ఆర్గన్స్. సో పరా ఇస్ ది కర్మ హియర్. ఇట్ ఈజ్ ఆక్సిలియరీ టు కర్మ. ఇట్ టెల్స్ యూ, ఇట్ హెల్ప్స్ యూ టు రికగ్నైజ్ విచ్ యాక్షన్ యూ హౌ టు పర్ఫార్మ్ అండ్ హౌ టు పర్ఫార్మ్. ఓన్లీ దట్ మచ్ ఇట్, దట్ ఈస్ ది సర్వీస్ ఇట్ కెన్ డూ. సో దిస్ వే జ్ఞానం, ఇట్ ఆల్వేస్ హెల్ప్స్. It fixes, it gives a fixation to you in the mind, and also it works as an auxiliary to karma. This is how jnanam functions, except in one place. Parangam cha. Parangam cha atma vijnana danyatra ityavadhariyatam. Except in the case of self-knowledge, this is how jnanam is. జ్ఞానం ఆఫ్ ఫిజిక్స్ ఈజ్ లైక్ దాట్, జ్ఞానం ఆఫ్ కెమిస్ట్రీ ఈజ్ లైక్ దాట్, జ్ఞానం ఆఫ్ కర్మకాండ, ఎవ్రీథింగ్, ఎవ్రీ జ్ఞానం ఈజ్ లైక్ దాట్. ఇట్ గివ్స్ అస్ ఏ ఫిక్స్డ్ ఐడియా అబౌట్ ఎ గివెన్ సబ్జెక్ట్ మ్యాటర్. ఏ సంస్కార ఈజ్ గివెన్ అండ్ ఇట్ హెల్ప్స్ అస్ టు రికగ్నైజ్ ఏ పర్టికులర్ యాక్షన్ అండ్ హెల్ప్స్ అస్ టు డూ ఇట్ అండ్ హెల్ప్స్ అస్ టు నో హౌ టు డూ ఇట్, ఎక్సెప్ట్ ఇన్ వన్ ప్లేస్. దట్ ఈజ్ ఆత్మ విజ్ఞాన. So when that exception is pointed out, it means in the case of Atma, the knowledge of the self, it doesn't give you any samskara, no samskara. That's why when you attend a class of Vedanta, you will not get any, you will not acquire a new idea, a new notion. It doesn't give you any new notion or idea or fixation. It only demolishes all the ideas, all the notions, all the fixations that the person may have till then. It doesn't replace an existing idea with a new idea. Vedanta doesn't do that, number one. Secondly, it doesn't serve as an auxiliary to karma. It stands entirely in its own right. So atma jnanam versus every other branch of knowledge, they are entirely different in their approach, in their function, in their result, etc. Therefore, I said this to bring out the importance of Atma Jnanam. So, you have to first recognize, so Jnana is not going to accomplish anything in you. So Brahma, ultimately, by the time you know the Brahman, you will not be knowing it as distinct from you. You will be knowing it as non-different from you. That means there is no knowing there. There is only being Brahman. Brahma vita brahmaiva bhavati. Once you come to know of the Brahman, then that knowing means you be one with the Brahman. That is how you will know. That's why quite often I say, you are not going to know the truth. You can only be the truth. That is one thing which I always say. And also I say, it has become a fashion to me to say this, that by when you say you know the truth, you deny the truth. So like that. So you can only be the truth. Anyway, so having said all this, jnanam here is not going to accomplish anything fresh. That means Brahma jnanam is not going to accomplish anything new. That means Brahma, which is Atma, is already accomplished. When the goal is already reached, it is already accomplished, karma becomes meaningless. karma has no role to play. On the other hand, if the goal is already accomplished and you pursue it through effort, you will be going in the wrong direction. You will never reach the goal. So for this, we always quote this nyaya, kantagata chamikara nyaya. So the necklace in the queen has her diamond necklace in her neck and she is searching for it. So when she will get it, when she will gain it, she should first stop searching, then only she will gain it. As long as she is assiduously searching for the necklace, she will not gain it. So one has to very carefully look at it. So it doesn't mean that we are altogether negating karma, etc. Karma has got its own relevance. It is called sahakari sadhanam. It is like you need a plate for taking food, etc. So you are not going to eat the plate. It is needed. Without plate also you can eat, really speaking. But it helps. Anyway, it has its own relevance. But it is not the question of sentiment. That is not the point. We should not go by sentimentality. The clear cut understanding must be there. Therefore, Brahma Jnanam. Here, it is Jnanam which is all important. Everything else is secondary. In the world of things, it is karma which is all important and Jnanam subserves the karma. Having understood these domains clearly, now to begin Brahma Vichara, you have to first establish Ajnana. You see, this is very important. When you have a problem, Ajnana is the problem, you know. When you have a problem, the only way to solve the problem is to look at the problem. You look into the problem, you investigate it, you inquire into it, you stay with it. In fact, I would go to the extent of saying you love it, you love the problem. So that you won't move 1 inch away from the problem. Then you will have solved it. You will solve it eventually. On the other hand, when you have a problem and you try to escape from it, in any possible, there are many possible escapes are there. Any number of ways we can devise to escape from the problem. As long as you try to escape from the problem, you will never solve it. It will remain. It will come back in one form or the other. Therefore, we have to address the problem squarely. So, ajnana, ignorance is the problem. And we have to address it. We have to understand it. In understanding the ignorance, you will conquer the ignorance. This is the foundation of the adhyasa bhashya. Adhyasa is superimposing. That is the meaning of the adhyasa. There is a, you see, in our life, there is a real mix-up of things, two things. Unfortunately, in life, we mix up the real and the unreal. There is the real in our life, and there is the unreal. As long as you delineate them, you discriminate between the two, discern them, so long you are not bound. The unreal won't bind you, because when you know the unreal as unreal, it loses its capacity to bind. So in our life, the main issue is that we mix up the real and unreal. And the purpose of yoga, yoga means effort, yoga means striving to gain the knowledge, jnana yoga, you know, or even karma becomes yoga, karma yoga. So whatever yoga it is, karma yoga or jnana yoga, also called sankhya yoga. The purpose of yoga is to put an end to this mix-up. So, adhyasa, adhyasa bhashyam, it clearly helps us to understand this mix-up of the real and unreal. So, the word adhyasa, that is very essential. We have to clearly understand the mix-up and then we can unravel it and you will know the truth. It doesn't take much time to know the truth. It is very simple. Truth is always simple. It is never complex. It is the untruth. It is the fixations that we have in our mind which are very complex. In fact, as persons, we are very complex beings. We are very complex. We work all the time at cross purposes. We undo what we have done yesterday. We lose the ground that we have conquered yesterday. So like that we work always at cross purposes. That's why we are always struggling. We are very complex people. So there is a huge mix-up in our life. This has to be settled. And so the Adhyasa Bhashya becomes very important, especially from the standpoint of Vedanta. Also, what happens is that we started at what time? Yeah. Also, just I am still in a reasonable way only. So I would suggest that we claim that we are students of Vedanta, and we also pat ourselves that we are studying Vedanta since long and all that. I'm not trying to cast any aspersions or any such thing. I'm not trying to say anything against anybody. I am making a statement from whatever little experience I had in life. We end up compromising very badly on the basics of Vedanta. This is our problem. That's why this blessed thing called Atma Jnanam, it always remains at a distance. Because we make very fundamental, we compromise on the very fundamentals of the truth. So, what I suggest is, don't compromise on the basics of Vedanta. You should not do that. So, some funny ideas or some sentimentality or some fixations of mind we carry with us, and the mind rules our lives, and in the process we end up compromising on the very basic truths of Vedanta. As long as we do that, we will only be paying lip service to Vedanta. We will not be achieving anything in that direction. And Adhyasa Bhashya, it endeavors to correct this very fundamental mistake. So it takes us to the bare reality of human existence and points out the very fundamental mistake in very clear and simple terms. And thus, it makes us stand utterly naked under the sky. This is called Digambara. Shiva is Digambara. Digambara means he is a, it's not that he doesn't have clothes, that is it's a symbolic word. He stands, you stand divested of all definitions, all self-definitions, all self-images, all ideas that you have about yourself. Every idea you are ready to jettison, ready to cast aside, cast off. You stand utterly naked under the sky. Then you will come to know the truth. Because the truth is clouded by so many notions. Like that. So Adhyasa Bhashya, it helps to appreciate this fact of life. So like that, it is a very glorious Bhashya. The world over, it is appreciated and it is praised. Shankara is a philosopher of India, but he is not a philosopher of India anymore. He is the philosopher of the world. So he is the pole star in the firmament of Vedanta, in the firmament of the world philosophy. And that status is given to Shankara by his Adhyasa Bhashya, among a few other things. The Adhyasa Bhashya is the very first one. So with this introduction, I conclude the class here. We'll continue it in the next class. ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु सो ऐ डिड् नाट् इवन् रीड् दि फस्ट् सेण्टेन्स् टुडे यु विल् डू इट् इन् द नेक्स्ट् क्लास् सो यु मे नोट् that the next class will be on 7th. 7th and 8th we will have a series of classes. I am hoping that I will be able to finish the Adhyasa Bhashya by the end of October. So keep the entire October month for this. You just reserve it for this. And every weekend I am going to take class. Even every one of the weekends of October I am planning to take classes, both Saturday and Sunday. And the first and third Sundays we will not have classes in the morning. second and fourth Sundays we will have classes both in the morning and the evening. First and third Sunday we will have classes only in the evening. Every Saturday we will have classes. So like that we will work out on it and finish it by the end of October. Because if anything is left out by the end of October, I don't have even a single day in November, or at least just maybe just one day in November. Therefore I want to finish it in October. You just keep this point in mind. Hari Om. Yeah.
Join us for dinner.
Join us for dinner. Yeah. So I wanted to talk with you, but I did not have to. Now I have to talk with you. So I didn't have to. Yeah.